With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. It is Tuesday, a day that I'm going to start calling either bro day or short attention span Tuesdays, whichever catches on, or some variation of that, because Paul Gallant and I both have short attention spans.
Pretty bad.
Mine might be brain damage related. Yours, out of like childhood trauma or
so
something.
So here's the thing. I've actually probably hit my head, not quite to the degree that you have, but I am a huge klutz when it comes to just my head walking around. I bump my head usually once a day.
Oh, that's good. That's a good rate. Real quick, couple big announcements, actually. One big announcement. Michael Lombardi, former GM in the NFL, a longtime scout, and just an interesting guy, a guy that I think 90% of the time is really, really smart, and 10% of the time I want to reach through the radio and scream at him, and I've told him as much. He's going to be joining us every Thursday.
Nice.
So I really enjoy listening to him, watching him, and I'm going to really, really enjoy getting his perspective. I told him on the phone yesterday, like, when I was a player, there's so many things that happen in the front office that you're like, what the hell? Like, what are these guys possibly thinking? What are they doing? And now that I've been out of the league for a while, I've started to realize, like, oh yeah, it wasn't just my narrow little perspective on things. Like, GMs have to worry about the whole damn team and 5 years out and all that
stuff. Thankless job, really. I mean, you have to get a quarterback, and if you don't get a quarterback, you could hit on a lot of other good players and it doesn't fucking matter. You
well,
know?
As a baseball player, you get a lot of credit for hitting 300. As a GM, if you hit 300, you're still doing pretty well, but all people care about are the... Mm-hmm. It would be like if a baseball player, like, if fans were consumed with the 50% of their at-bats that didn't result in anything productive.
You know, we've gone in a direction with baseball where slugging percentage is so important, and I've always been just old-fashioned, hey, get on base, slap the ball into the outfield. I'm a big average guy. Not a lot of people are average guys anymore, so you could hit for 300 average. That's really good.
Yeah.
But if you're not hitting a bunch of doubles and home runs, getting the quarterbacks and all that stuff, then you're out of the league really quickly.
And for anybody that questions my math just a few seconds ago, I started thinking about on-base percentage instead of the actual all the other stuff and sack flies and all that. Anyway, the other thing would be just this, that I think Paul's going to join us every Tuesday as long as his schedule allows it. We'll work on the name, and feel free to tweet at PaineNFL, at Gallant Says, for suggestions to the Tuesday segment. But I kind of think of this as like when Colin Cowherd would bring our friend Nick Wright in when Nick was first at Fox Sports. And Nick was here with us in Houston on the radio. Then he got hired by Fox Sports, but they didn't really have anything for him to do. So Nick was out in LA just watching sports and listening to podcasts.
I'm so jealous.
And then like a couple times a week going on Colin Cowherd, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like Colin Cowherd had Nick on because Nick was the younger, woke dude that had a different intellectual spin on things. I think Nick was there specifically to rid Colin Cowherd of his racist John Wall positions. And now Colin Cowherd has at least transferred those racist positions onto Baker Mayfield.
And National Network TV has gone to such talk about basketball, you want to have someone that actually knows what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
Colin Cowherd doesn't. Nick is on top of the NBA, and when he is not busy kissing every single square inch of LeBron James's body, he is really on top of it. So
I like that Nick has gone this route. Skip Bayless made a career out of tearing down LeBron. I mean, like, he was already big. Skip Bayless was already big before LeBron.
But he made a career really, tearing other people down, too, with Troy Aikman in that Dallas Cowboys book that he wrote.
No, Nick is now kind of making a career of elevating LeBron James, which at times means tearing down Kevin Durant or other people, but mostly it's built around just this unabashed love
for
LeBron
love.
James.
Yeah. It's so pure and so natural now that I think about it. I mean, it is interesting, this industry that we're in, because we do tend to be negative, and I know I get too negative about a lot of stuff. There are a lot of things in life that I actually do enjoy, but I tend, when it comes to this, I don't know what it is, but I think when you talk about it and you watch it all the time, you cease to have the same kind of enjoyment that you maybe did when you were a kid watching sports.
You get cynical about things?
A little bit.
Weird. It's strange because if you talk for 4 hours, inevitably you end up getting negative about stuff. You almost have to focus on staying positive. I don't know what weird element of just human psychology that is, that the more you dwell on it, and the more you, I guess you have to produce content for 4 hours. And I never feel like I'm at a loss for producing content or coming up with different angles or things to say. Like, I would never say something just because I got to say something.
Right.
But there's something about doing it for 4 hours that you just naturally get that
and
way.
There will be times where you've talked about something nonstop that everyone wants to hear about.
Yeah.
And you're just like, man,
I'm
tired of this. Like, take the entire Deflategate saga.
You get tired of it.
Yeah, you're just burned out by it. And look, it's natural. Now, again, our jobs are not jobs.
No. It's a
very, very,
job.
Very, very, very cushy, easy job where I have to watch sports. It's not that hard. Yet I bitch about it. I find a way to do it.
So Colin Cowherd brought in Nick Wright. I think by the same tone, I'm not as old and close to death as Colin Cowherd is.
How old is he, by the way?
He's not that old, actually. He acts like a 78-year-old in a lot of respects, but I think he's only in his 50s. He's like 51, 52. Yeah, look it up for me.
I'm looking it up as you go. Keep
so
going.
He would bring in Nick Wright, and now Nick Wright obviously has gone on
54.
To great things. I'm going to bring you in because you're another younger Syracuse grad, and in a lot of ways you remind me of a guy I played football with by the name of Mark Banowitz,
okay.
Who was an offensive lineman at Syracuse, ended up coming to Jacksonville either as a late-round draft pick or a college free agent. I can't remember. But Mark was a lot like you in that a lot of people just assumed he was kind of like a bro meathead type, but he was like a Rhodes – he turned down a Rhodes scholarship to have the opportunity to play in the NFL. He had to choose, and it wasn't much of a choice. He was going to take the NFL.
Right.
But he was that bright. He had like a 3.98 GPA in college.
Well, that's way better. That's way better than me. I appreciate the compliment.
But you're a bright guy. You're brighter than people realize. Like, I realized the first week I was working with you, I was like, oh, crap, Paul's making all these historical references and everything that I don't have a clue what he's talking about.
It's more than I'm just a history nerd. I've actually
watched a lot of History Channel.
I listen to a lot of history podcasts. There's that Dan Carlin podcast. I actually just got on another one, and I've been listening to the conquest of the Aztecs,
yeah.
Hernando Cortez and Montezuma.
Oh, it's a crazy story.
Yeah, this guy who's narrating it, and honestly, I forget his name. The podcast is titled History on Fire. The guy's got this thick, robust Italian accent. Like, you can hear, it's really thick. It's sometimes a little difficult to understand, but I cannot put this thing down. I've listened to three parts already. The last 2 days, I've listened to 7.5 hours of this stuff.
You get to the part where Cortez goes in and bamboozles Montezuma?
Yes. Oh, that was my
he
favorite part.
He just marches into, what's the capital city there?
Tenochtitlan, I think.
So
I might pronounce it wrong.
He marches in with all these guys.
Yeah.
And they've got superior weapons and everything.
They're outnumbered.
But he just walks into the throne room, right?
Yeah,
and then just
much.
Kills all of Montezuma's bodyguards.
So they slowly do it over time, and they kept on asking for tribute over and over, and the Aztecs kept trying to appease. And the thing that I've learned from listening through this, at least per the opinion of the person that's narrating this podcast, is that Montezuma was a giant pussy. He was terrified of being killed. And to his credit, wouldn't we all? Or in his defense, wouldn't we all?
Oh, dude, I would totally think that these people with their shiny suits of armor and everything were magical gods. Like, I would. There's not a doubt in my mind. If somebody showed up like with this advanced form of technology that I'd never seen before,
apparently they were not thought to be gods. They just had such superior technology that they were definitely people not to be messed around with. And Hernando Cortez is a really fascinating figure, and I've heard there actually might be a television series in the works where they might have obtained a copyright or trademark or something along those lines. I don't know what the specific terminology is, but like Javier Bardem and somebody else are in the works with something that could be about the conquest of the Aztecs. I think it would be a perfect for HBO television show. Seriously, there's so much drama and just the fascination with two new cultures meeting each other for the first time and having no idea what the other people were about.
Which brings us to DJ Swearinger, DJ Swearinger, who's probably one of the most colorful, unique personalities in the NFL. We had the honor of covering him for a couple years here in Houston before we went off to Tampa, then off to Arizona, and now in Washington. This is the only really interesting news in the NFL as far as I'm concerned today. We could be talking about, Chad Kelly surpassed Paxton Lynch for the quarterback, second
Lynch
string
the bus.
Quarterback job in Denver. And now it's just a matter of time until he overtakes Case Case Keenum. Those are the stories that people are trying to manufacture. I look at my phone this morning and I see this exchange that looks so perfectly DJ Swearinger, which is the Jets are having a combined practice, and it seems like this has been going on for like 4 days. The Jets and Redskins have combined practices, but Terrell Pryor, playing wide receiver for the Jets, is going after a ball in the end zone. Washington Redskins defensive back is contesting it, and it's an incomplete pass. So the Washington Redskins DBs go nuts. They're talking all kinds of smack. And then DJ Swearinger kind of comes out of the side of the screen, goes up, and he's yelling something at Terrell Pryor. And then DJ does a quick cock the fist, like kind of like a just like to threaten him a little bit. And Terrell Pryor flinches extremely.
Oh,
like Terrell
yeah.
Pryor looks like he's trying to dodge an inside pitch. It was a real bad flinch. And now people are saying that Terrell Pryor can't come back. He can't play football again. I'm going to do this. I might be the one man in America today that will stand up and say that people should not be ashamed of flinching. And I say this only because if you grew up with a big brother, there was no, like, I never had an opportunity to flinch. Mm. It was, if my brother raised his hand, he was punching me. And it took me, like, years to, I don't know how many years, like, whatever. Like, being around in high school and everything of, like, working my way out of that tendency to flinch.
You know, here's the thing, though. You do need to flinch. You need to react in some way. If you don't react, like, what does that accomplish? Hey, I'm a hardo. I didn't respond.
I got
to some
cold
person
cocked.
That, right, because if you get cold cocked, you're done. That's
right.
It.
Like, so if you're walking up and Terrell Pryor's not expecting like anybody to cold cock him at that point, I guess the first thing that happens is you look at somebody that's about to cold cock you.
If he winds up, I mean, the thing is, first off, get out of the way, and second off, you want to react, you want to respond in a way, shape, or form, which I don't think anyone that hasn't had mixed martial arts training is going to be good at. You're going to be sloppy and it's going to
That's
be awkward
what,
as hell. It's
yeah,
going to be a bunch of bros at a frat party.
Are we supposed to walk around like constantly ready to attack when attacked? Like on the instant when you're not expecting anything at all?
Well, thousands of years ago, I think we were supposed to. Now,
although, like life expectancy was like 17 years.
Right, yeah. You could like have a random...
Time, how far back are we going here? Like, are we going back to hunter-gatherer times? Or are we going back to...
I think a little bit after that. I think if you're walking around in an ancient city from market to your home or something like that, you would probably want to keep an eye out for some random robbers
or
bandits.
If you're on a path.
Yeah, oh, definitely
on a
road,
like an old Roman road or something.
Yeah, someone or if you're in a city, someone around an alleyway that's and then someone coming from behind.
Do you know how easy it would have been to get away with murder back in the day? I mean, just incredible.
You get away with it every time.
Like, all the time.
Right.
And especially if you're well-connected.
If you're well-connected,
I mean, that was pretty much it. It was like, yeah, throw a couple shillings at somebody.
Probably pretty easy to get falsely accused of murder, too.
It would get really, really easy to be falsely accused.
Yeah.
By the same token, if you got falsely accused by somebody that had money.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, if I can't watch some of these things about, like, what princes must have been able to get away with.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
Where they're, the law of the land. Like, your lord is in charge of everything, so, like, any of the royal family or any of the nobility.
I think, and my knowledge of all history is above average. I would say, like, 1400s, 1500s is where probably people started getting actually held accountable for some of the shit they did, and obviously ending with the French Revolution, which is when people realized, oh yeah, monarchs are human beings too, and they can bleed like us.
But kind of like the Middle Ages and Renaissance, where you started to have a court system. Middle Ages to the Renaissance, they started to develop a court system.
But if you're a peasant, you're screwed. If you're a poor person, you're screwed. Basically, be born a noble, be born a baron, be born a duke, be born a king or a princess or something.
If there's any reason people should study history, it's to truly understand how miserable life was for the vast majority of humans.
Like, you don't
really
want to go back in time
up to until about 50 years ago.
But even
and
then,
really, but now even like worldwide, like over the last 20 years, it's crazy how much better poverty has gotten. I mean, there's still some extremely impoverished areas, but worldwide, the number of people that are starving and whatnot has really been reduced drastically.
That's true. So here's what I wonder about 50 years ago. Say you go back in time 50 years ago. On one hand, you would be bored as shit. You would not have your phone. You would not have television. You would not be able to occupy yourself during downtimes the way that you normally would. On the other hand, you could use all that downtime that you'd have because you're bored with everything
to actually read a book or create. Do things.
Yeah. You could, if that's the thing about going back in time. You would be, if you were to go back in time and know where history would go.
Yeah.
You could like rewrite history because you would be so bored that you would have nothing else to do but that.
Well, boredom used to be a much bigger part of your everyday life. And that was like, as a kid.
No, it's not.
As a kid, I can just remember so many times, like going to visit my dad's house in the winter and there was no TV because he was living in some house he was renovating. And, you know, there were no Game Boys or anything. Mm-hmm. So it was like you had like two books to read that you'd already read and you just spent a whole lot of time creating fun for yourself. And, I mean, there's a lot of reason to believe that part of that is really healthy, that your brain probably
you
should be bored at least a little bit every day just to allow everything to for everything to regenerate and regroup, but we don't do that anymore.
This is one of the things that I feel like you'd have a lot more insight on. This is one of the reasons I'm terrified of the idea of having a kid, other than, you know, paying for them, which to me just seems so astronomically expensive. It's also, I mean, how do you raise them effectively where you're not putting them in a place where they are completely away from technology? They're still on top of it enough, but you also limit it at the same time. Because I know when I was growing up, I didn't have any video game consoles. We didn't have cable TV until I was probably in fourth grade. The first video game system I got was an N64 in fifth grade, which was out of date in literally 6 months. And it was good because I played with Legos. I played with Playmobil.
Right.
I made my Beanie Babies play football against one another and actually created rosters, logos, did play-by-play and all that shit, which is really kind of bizarre now that I think back
on it.
That's
not bizarre at all, though.
And reading sports almanacs. That's what I did.
You're working your imagination and all that.
Reading sports almanacs was the weird thing that I used to do.
I don't know. The only thing is that I don't want to wring my hands over something we have no clue where it's going to lead, because these kids that are doing all of this electronic stuff are obviously going to be way advanced beyond anything we can even comprehend.
Oh, especially now. I don't want to give my phone to a kid because I don't want to realize how lost I fucking am.
And things are so intuitive with them. And this is actually going to be a good lead into what we're just about to talk about. But things are so intuitive with them. But there is also an extreme spike in the suicide rate in the last decade. There's a rise in depression. I've been talking to a lot of neurologists lately just because I'm trying to learn more about the CTE research and some of the weaknesses with the CTE research. I'm just trying to learn about all of it. But a couple of them told me just how much they're seeing younger and younger people for memory disorders and all these various neurological disorders. And so much of it's tied to, one, lack of sleep, which we know lack of sleep is just, it kills everything. Mm-hmm. It kills your metabolism. It kills your mental health. It kills your intelligence, all these things. And it's just so tempting to stare at that blue light screen.
Really is.
Which is reducing your melatonin. So you're like, you're physiologically less able to go to sleep. Not to mention, you're also exciting your brain. And you're engaging sometimes in antisocial social media behavior.
More than
to
sometimes.
To 2 or 3 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So these teenagers are sleep deprived even more than they used to be. They've always been sleep deprived, but now it's to an extreme extent. And it's while they're having all this negative social pressure on them, and it's scary as hell.
It's a lot.
That's the part for me for the next 5 years of my daughter's life until she gets through her teenage years. I don't know what challenges we're going to face, but you gotta have your head on a swivel.
Right, yeah, and I mean, for me, I think that it maybe has sped up certain things in terms of just... How do I phrase this? Because I get what you're saying. Where there's all this stuff that you say like I just open up my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to mindlessly go to number one, Instagram.
Right.
Number two, one of those stupid dating apps, and I will have no idea what I am doing. And then after like 10 minutes, I'll put it down. I'm like, what did I do?
Like that time,
where did I go?
You just skipped forward in time.
And it depresses me that this is a reality. That now I'm starting to add up. Like, how if I add up all the time that I've done this? What is this actually added up to?
You know what can
probably
help a lot?
Way too much time.
No, you know what you should get is there are apps that'll monitor how much time you're spending on each device. Well, including just on your iPhone itself, it'll tell you.
It tells you the amount of time or battery power being used by an app at a specific time. I think.
But there's one that'll. There are a couple apps that'll tell you exactly like how long you've been on each app, like at the end of the day, and you can set goals for yourself.
Yes.
I think some of the more extreme ones will actually shut it down for you. Which this is the one rule in life. My mom's boss, Bob K, taught me this when I was a teenager, was like, this is this engineer who was really successful, built this huge company. But he said, like, for all of, for everything he knew about mathematics and his MBA and anything like that, by far the biggest thing that people forget to do when they're trying to change a behavior is just to count things. Like, that's all it is simply counting things. Like, how often a day are you making this mistake? Like, let's count how many mistakes we're making. Hey, look, these are the most mistakes we're making. Let's squash those. Like, before you get sophisticated with anything, simple counting.
No, you aren't lying. And one of the things that I've tried to do in my life, and I'm extremely hard on myself to a negative degree, like, I actually see a therapist about it. And for those who don't know, I go up and down, up and down. There have been times where I've wondered if I have any bipolar tendencies. It does run in my family, but there is a tally that I actually have up on the board, and I have it for a bunch of different things that every single day that I want to do. Did I wake up on time? Did I exhibit self-respect towards myself in the way that I woke up, ate, slept, handled my personal business? And I have other things too, like, did you read today? Did you play the guitar today?
Yeah.
Did you unwind for a little but not for too long today? And I have this, and the only one that I've actually been able to steadily get up is the gym.
And, oh, yeah.
But right now we are at a point where yesterday...
you're plateauing with the other stuff you're saying?
Well, yesterday we had a I just am tired of everything day, and I ended up playing on my Xbox for about 7 hours while listening to podcasts.
But I wonder...
Just to check out completely from everything.
Like, not to try to tear down anything your therapist is doing or anything.
No, don't.
But I wonder, like, as soon as you start listing off
all those... This is what I
those,
do.
Okay,
when this you're... This is my own head. This is the problem. I go way... I overanalyze the shit out of everything I do.
Okay, because what I would say is, like, when you start to list off all those things, that becomes almost setting yourself up for a vicious cycle, like a downward spiral of like, okay, it's impossible for you to do all those things every day.
I know. So this is the every day.
But what there might be is like what we just talked about with sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it might be as simple as the biggest change you can make is just, can I get at least a certain amount of sleep every day? Like, and focus completely and totally on that. And it's amazing how many other things fall into line.
You have to do it one thing at a time. And I've been trying, and it's an everyday process. For anyone out there, I mean, it's always an everyday process. Next day, try to be better.
So, and,
well, hang on. I wanted to toss you where you're coming here, because this is one of these things where I saw you put this in our Mad Radio show rundown with Mike Meltzer last night, and I look at this and I'm like, what the fuck is this?
This live streaming.
There's this video of what's
Ice
his name?
Poseidon.
Ice Poseidon. Okay, and there's a YouTube trailer of, I guess, what he does when he's video streaming, and outside of going to a gun range, going to what looked like a seedy bar, and having a lady like, from her mouth, put a shot into his mouth, and kissing a guy. The rest of it was just like him, like, awkwardly moving around, not saying anything funny.
And this is what it is. He's a live streamer. He just live streams like 4 to 8 hours of his life every day, either sitting in front of his computer just talking to his followers, of which he has 600,000 on YouTube, or going out and getting content on the street, which includes like awkwardly hitting on women. Like, so that's one of the big things his followers love, when he just goes and hits on women and flames out. They love that. He'll go around the streets in one of those big inflatable plastic balls and get harassed by the cops. He just does all these different things, and I guess he's entertaining enough that people want to follow him, and he makes $700,000 a year through endorsements, through donations, including
I'm doing it wrong.
People, kids that follow him will pay extra to have their comments show up on the screen, and it's this. I've never
how old
felt
is, do you
older.
Know how old, do you know how old
I
he is?
I think he's like in his early 20s.
It makes me feel slightly better.
But I'm so confused. Like, I'm
same
here. I'm reading this article in the New Yorker about it, and it's just blowing my mind, like, how foreign all of this is to me, including the fact that the people that follow him, like, want to contribute to the show by creating drama. So they'll do things like, this is a thing now, swatting. Remember when a guy got killed a couple months ago because a SWAT team had been called to his house, and even though nothing was going on and the cops ended up killing the guy because they thought there was a situation, they'll do this to these live streamers. It's like a prank. Somebody will call like call in a kidnapping scare or something, and the SWAT team will show up at his house.
That's terrifying.
This guy Ice Poseidon now has a special like liaison at the LAPD, so that whenever anything happens, he can call that person immediately, and they'll explain to the cops on site.
Oh
like,
man,
it's just nuts. He gets like 4 or 5 fake pizza orders a day. People come over and just crash at his place, like his different listeners and followers, and it's just this life of complete mayhem. But this is what he does now.
It's so strange that this is where we're at, is that people are so into watching other people do things, and I suppose that is what this phone gives us, is the ability when we're doing something that we don't want to do to see somebody doing something that we want to do or something that we just don't have the capacity to actually do. But it makes me, and I feel the same way as you, Seth. Like, first off, I feel like I totally missed the boat on something that could have given me an incredible life. Second off, I feel like I should start doing something now with that,
yeah.
But I don't know how, and I don't even know what the point is. I mean, my YouTube page, which I rarely use, and I'm trying to add stuff to it because we have some issues when it comes to, I think, like saving audio files from the past, and I've thought about uploading some old like segments and random clips that I've done in the past that we can't upload through our own site, but there's some legality issues on that side, which also I don't really know about, but I have 36 subscribers on YouTube. 36.
This well, guy's because you're not going out and you need to go out and hit on girls and stuff.
But see, and
you need to do it live.
But that's what I don't like. Should I be doing this on Facebook Live? Like, I thought Facebook Live was the thing, but he's doing it on YouTube.
Yeah.
What's the difference between YouTube and Facebook? I don't even fucking know.
I think you could do it, and that's where it's getting
Instagram
crazy
Live too.
Is you can do Facebook Live, and you can get sponsored, and you get paid for all of those in product placement and through getting paid directly through YouTube. It's just overwhelming.
There's so many different things that we try to be on top of from a social media perspective, just being in sports media and everyone that's in media in general.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people that are like, I think the good thing for you, Seth, is that you at least realize that change is coming and you're open to it. There are a lot of dinosaurs in our industry that aren't much older than you, some of which are younger than you,
yeah,
that have no idea that you have to adapt. I know I have to adapt. I don't know how to adapt to this, though. Like, I
well,
I don't
there's
know.
No way. Right. And you're still young, but it's not like you want
not
to be
young.
Ice Poseidon.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
And there's no way, like, I'm not going to be Ice Poseidon. I'm not going to be able to find a bunch of 45-year-old guys that are like, hey, I'm going to follow Seth on YouTube
yeah,
for
right?
2 hours. Honey, no, I can't help out. I can't help right now. I got to watch Seth on YouTube for 2 hours. It's just not going to work out that way. I feel like you could, except that I think that where it's going is that if you're going to be a media personality now, it's a matter of almost always being available, like an extreme presence of mind in your followers, because it's so competitive for people's attention,
yeah,
and they have so many different outlets that it almost needs to be that like you're there for them every day for several hours a day.
And that's
it's like throughout the day.
And that's a commitment, and you need to have that commitment to build up the following. But that's what
but
works
then,
for everything.
But then once you get to that point, I mean, like television is still going to be television,
yeah,
for a long time, or bigger, even if it's not ultimately television, it's still going to be like, look, ESPN is going to be streaming to people's eyeballs and
yeah, people are always going to watch sports
and eardrums
on that, right,
and everything. It might not be via traditional television, but it's
yeah,
going to be there. But for the most part, building up things, when you talked about earlier, you know, 50 years ago when people were bored, I think the one thing then too was that you had time to sculpt something creative. Like, when you created something, you had time to do 3 or 4 or 5 drafts of it, where now there's such a premium on just spitting out content.
Nonstop.
That I think maybe a lot of the next great novelists are going to end up being bloggers, and they'll probably make more money blogging, but is it art, you know? Are they doing something as special? And they don't care.
I feel for writers, too, because I wonder about the future of writing.
Yeah.
And the people that and look, everything changes over time. Like, music has had so many different things, and it's almost like every single version of music is like a response to the music before it. Say you had the glamour metal rockers, right afterwards you have grunge. So you go from guys like that are in tights and spandex with long hair to like homeless people. Like, you know, there's always like a follow up. And for writing, I feel like now, say take a look at an article that was on Grantland or on The Ringer for us for sports media and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're long. They're really long. Now on The Ringer, it actually says the length of a read of an article.
Like how long it'll take to read, yeah.
And for me, and this is something I've been trying to work on, I cannot for the life of me blog and not turn it into a goddamn odyssey. And if pisses me the hell off.
That's the problem.
That's the future of it, though. Right. It's short and concise and being amazing in that short and concise space. And that's a challenge. I feel for writers that used to have space to like kind of spread everything out.
I don't know about that, though, because I think there's any place. Look, you can have long form. You're not going to make as much money on it. I would say that the real tragedy, if you want to call it a tragedy, is that there's no place for editors anymore. Because those rambling pieces shouldn't be as long as they are. Those are rambling pieces. Like, it used to be, if you're going to write 4,000 words in Sports Illustrated, that was a damn fine piece of writing. You know, and it was like, it was 10,000 words whittled down to 4,000 words. Where now, it's like, I smoked half a joint and wrote for 3 hours. Here you go. Slap it on the web, bitches. You know, and it's just not the same thing. So you and I were talking before all this when we first learned of Ice Poseidon about how if this is the future of media, or at least this is one avenue that people can make money in media, I am surprised that there aren't more athletes doing just this. Like, I think there are a lot of guys that are active on Instagram or Twitter
or Facebook,
or maybe they'll put videos out, but I think there are guys that If they live streamed for like 3 hours a day the entire off season, they would bank.
Yes.
Like, and bank hardcore.
Oh, 100%.
And I think Rob Gronkowski might be the king of them all.
I think Gronk would do okay. I think that Gronk would do well because of his name brand more than anything. I think if you're looking for anyone on the Patriots, I think Julian Edelman would be the guy. Now, there's a shady situation that took place with him back, like, on a Halloween where there may or may not have been sexual assault going on. I know he was charged.
Was it alleged or what?
It was some alleged.
Did she actually press charges?
I think he was alleged to have groped someone at a dance party or something like that.
Oh, okay.
I remember it was an issue for a little bit, and honestly, off the top of my head, I don't remember all the specifics. If you want, I can look them up. But what I do know is that there was also like a Snapchat photo where someone like took a picture of passed out a girl, passed out Julian Edelman in a bed. I feel like Julian Edelman would have one of those low key, if he's single, assuming he's single. I don't even know about that right now, but I feel like Julian Edelman would be the best bang for your buck with live streaming. I feel like Gronk, it's like an hour of, yeah, you're at a party, woo, beer, yeah, and then it's like, all right, well, I'm done. I want new, fresh experiences. I think I get that with Edelman every time.
Well, you want conversations too, because I think that Ice Poseidon will have pretty good conversations with people while he's just hanging out. I don't know if you get that with Gronk.
No, I don't think so.
Gronk, though, there'd be a certain factor of like, holy crap, was that Ice Cube? You know, whoa, who's that he's hanging out with? And you wouldn't know.
True.
And then you'd be telling him, like, Gronk, get back to that side of the party.
It's a YouTube version of Coachella where you have no idea what's going to actually show up, and then all of a sudden it does. By the way, I'm going to Coachella next year. I can't wait.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
but the problem with that, too, is that somebody like Gronk can't be walking around in the company he's hanging out with and be known as the guy that, like, oh, there's Gronk, great, I'm on camera, you know? And that's another thing that bothers me about this Ice Poseidon and all these guys, is that they're just...
anonymous.
He's broadcasting. It's one thing if you're just taking pictures of something or somebody and putting it on Instagram and you're just a normal person. He's broadcasting random people who have no idea they're about to be broadcast out to 500,000 people, you know?
There's no rules for that,
like,
though.
Right, like in television, you got to get somebody's release and
same
everything
with radio.
Before you do all this.
Radio, you have to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, I could go around a bar, but I would have to, you have to ask, do you mind being on the radio before in some way, shape, or form?
So this guy, it's just completely unregulated, so anybody can just be streaming live and it's just going out to 500,000 people.
Wild West, man.
So, oh, geez, now I'm getting freaked out again.
Yeah.
I gotta just settle down, settle the demons, Seth, settle the demons. Okay, the other guys I thought were, J.J. Watt would be, I think a lot of people know exactly how it would look, and I think it would be really interesting. It would be more produced looking, though. It
yes.
would be, I think you'd see J.J.'s workouts, you'd see his charity appearances. I don't think you're gonna find J.J. like, J.J.'s not gonna have his stream on like while he's bitching about the neighbor's dog crapping in his yard.
It's not entertainment as much as it's motivation, I feel, like J.J. Watt. Like, hey, these are the kind of things that you can be doing, you just have to put your mind to it. It's like positive messaging, positive reinforcements through a role model / demigod-esque figure.
No, you said... See, I said Antonio Brown.
Well, he did it on Facebook Live. I feel like that wasn't very good. And honestly,
when he was in the post game, Steelers,
because that's the one time I can really remember Facebook Live for an NFL player actually being a headline of sorts. honestly, Antonio Brown off the field is annoying me. I don't really want to deal with more Antonio Brown. On the field, I want to see all Antonio Brown.
But that annoyingness off the field is what exactly what would make him a reality star.
Mm.
You're like, do you watch the Kardashians and think like, oh, those they're awesome? Like, no, it's their annoyingness and the drama and everything that sets it off.
Not going to lie, over the last month, I've been introduced to The Bachelor. I watched The Bachelor in Paradise for the first time last night, and I'm surprised by how into it I am. I talk shit about the show the entire way through, and it frustrates the other people that I'm watching the show with. But
oh, you got to be careful about that. I learned that with Melrose Place
in
college.
But
you got to be careful about talking smack about the show they love while you're watching.
But I feel like they can tell I'm enjoying it. I'm just a hater.
Yeah, but you're a distraction though too.
Yeah, that's if
you're,
true.
Paul, how's it feel when you're trying to watch a game and somebody is in your ear? Maybe it's a girl you just started dating, and she won't stop talking.
I'm actually cool with that.
You are?
I'm cool with it. If it was a game, Game of Thrones, though, I'd be like, no, get that.
Yeah. No, I learned that in college. Like, I was watching Melrose Place, and I was, you know, the whole first time, I was like, this is stupid. This is dumb. I can't believe you guys watched that. And it didn't go well for me afterwards.
That's no bueno.
But I learned the lesson.
I had a couple of names that I feel like would be fun. Okay, so think about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
The doctor offensive lineman from Kansas City.
I would love to see firsthand what someone going through medical school or as an intern.
He'd be a resident now if that's what he's going to do, because he graduated medical school.
I would want to see him at a hospital working, getting yelled at by residents.
Are you an intern first? You're an intern and then a resident?
I think you're an intern.
When you're an intern, you're really getting the treatment, right?
Right, yeah, I think
so.
Which
he can't do. He's not going to be able to do this until he's done playing
this is true.
Football, right?
But say he was doing this during the offseason.
Yeah.
I would watch this. I would be amused by him getting... Imagine like a doctor yelling at this giant 6'6", like 300-pound guy.
And you know some of those doctors would relish it.
Oh,
some of those
definitely.
Guys, it would just think like... I'm going to take down the big guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to show him a thing or two about what it means to doctor.
Ben Roethlisberger, I think, would be an interesting one because he's very unassuming when you look at him. But remember, this is a guy who obviously had the incident in Milledgeville, Georgia. This is a guy who I feel like probably hangs out with seedy people when he is not in front of a camera. This is a guy who once allegedly flipped off a TV van because he was riding a motorcycle on the highway and they started filming him. I feel like Ben Roethlisberger off the field is like an overweight bike gang member with like a seedy supporting cast, and you would see a weird underworld with him.
The supporting cast would be big with him. I can't see him like actually holding somebody's attention, even because I'm watching Very Cavallari with Kristen Cavallari and Jay, formerly Cutler Cavallari, and like he's funny, he's very very witty, but it's a very dry sense of humor, and I couldn't see him holding
the
whole show. So it'd have to be about Roethlisberger and all his buddies.
His entourage.
Yeah. Which you're exactly right. He might have some characters. He used to go through. Up in my wife's family's area in western New York, where there's a whole lot of snowmobiling and a bunch of snowmobiling trails and everything, every now and then, like, Roethlisberger or Jim Kelly or somebody else would show up, like, in these little diners out in the middle of nowhere, because they're out snowmobiling, you know, like 120 miles from Buffalo.
Yeah.
Just passing through.
One of my good friends, because I went to school up at Syracuse, and one of my good friends from Binghamton always was trying to get me to go out snowmobiling with him, and I refused to. When we were in college, he had this awesome car. It was for us in college, like for someone that had an Audi. It was like a brand new Audi. It was black. It was a beautiful car.
Yeah.
It was an A4. And he would drive it donuts around in the grocery store parking lots.
He was a rich kid.
We'd go out like at 9 o'clock. I don't know if he was rich because he bought this himself used for $10,000.
Oh,
drove
okay.
it up from Florida. It was like it was old. It was like an 04 Audi. But it was a really nice car. And he always wanted me to go snowmobiling with him. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, Steve, no, absolutely not.
Because he's crazy.
And it's funny because you would never expect him to be this crazy. But when it comes to all that stuff, like cars and outdoor shit, I'm just like,
oh. Is he dead?
No, he's still
alive. Good job,
no,
Steve.
No, actually, just visited him in New York City a couple of weeks ago. He surprised his girlfriend from college, who I like to think I played a little bit of a part in, where they met at a frat party that I was at, and they were making out, and I went up to Steve after she had left. I was like, yeah, it goes hot. 9 years later, 9 years later, he popped the question, so they're going to get married in the next year.
You put that seed into his head.
Oh, yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a couple men's health type topics today, but I've run out of time. So we'll save those. We'll table those for later on. Hopefully there will be more actual NFL news next week, but I do enjoy talking to you about world history and Ice Poseidon.
Go watch
Ice Poseidon, everybody. Sign up, be a subscriber. Go swat him.
I feel like he should give you some royalties for this. This is a lot of free publicity for Ice Poseidon.
I'm terrified now that I've talked about Ice Poseidon. I feel like a bunch of his followers are going to come after me.
You're going to show
Somebody's
up in the middle
go
of our show.
And be like, hey, Ice Poseidon. This is what this clown Seth Payne was saying about you. And then they're going to swat me, or send me pizza or something.
Oh yikes! Yeah, the concept of getting swatted is terrifying. Because I feel like, as someone who walks around his house naked all the time, I don't want to die naked. I feel like it'd be very embarrassing just to get shot the hell out of naked.
The biggest mistake he makes, I guess it's not a mistake because he wants people to come over to his house, is everybody knows his address and everything and where he lives. Real quick.
Bold.
One of the parts of this story, he walks into a restaurant and immediately his followers, who are, I guess, his fans, start like plastering, calling the restaurant, saying there's an emergency, calling the restaurant, saying that Ice Poseidon is a pedophile and a sex offender. Or, and this is the crazy, like, weird part that I just don't get, giving negative Yelp reviews to that restaurant. So, like, Ice Poseidon, just by walking into the restaurant, is hurting this company's business. And, like, and there's kids out there at their computers or on their phones or whatever that just think it's hilarious. So like, let's destroy this.
So life is, so it's an interactive prank. It's like a combination. The more that I think about it, now I feel like I'm starting to understand it. It's sort of like Punk'd, but it's an interactive version of Punk that's happening in real time, and he is sometimes the subject of the punking, and sometimes he is doing the punking, and it's the unpredictable nature of it, I suppose, would give a lot of a rewatch factor to it.
It's almost this whole online culture that I still don't quite get of, like, trolling, which is different, but it's different than an extreme troll who lives just to anger people. It's almost just like, hey, yeah, of course, we're trolling. That's fun, right? Yeah, I'm just messing with you. Like, I'm just destroying your life. And kids just not getting the real world consequences.
Well, they're not attached to it. It's so easy to say anything, to do anything online, and not actually face the face-to-face repercussions that you're supposed to face when you say certain things.
Oh, it's a brave new world, Poglant. I don't know if I'm built for it. So, everybody.
I'm not.
Michael Lombardi this Thursday all the way through the Super Bowl. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. On Wednesdays, Sean Pendergast and I recap the reality sports world. So
Those have been fun.
Yeah, right now we're doing Hard Knocks, and we're also doing Very Cavallari. And really appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks,
have a good afternoon of checking off your boxes of mental health.
Oh, Jesus.
Get some sleep.
Yeah, that's what I need more than anything.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.